Lavelle here Today is going to speak to us about their kind of control. Some of the information that is all kept up to sell our tickets, which will be coming.
Maybe.
You need this? Oh, you got, does this work?
I don't think so, no.
No. Okay, I'll just leave that and you can.
Okay.
Thank you, James.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'm going to rely kind of heavily on my notes. I don't know, can you guys hear me as it stands? Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is James Fable. I am the Executive Director of the Bear Climb Patrol, Inc. I would like to thank you for inviting me to be here with you today. It's a wonderful opportunity. Pleasure to meet you all. Just for the record, public speaking is not where I shine. I'm more of a practical applications kind of guy. So I've been told this whole public speaking thing gets better with time, but I'm still not feeling it yet. So please bear with me. I'd like to start today by referencing a date I'll never forget. A date that changed my life and the lives of those around me, a date that had a profound impact on our nation, a date that brought about an awakening. The 14th of August 2014, or 17th of August 2014, Tina Fontaine's body was found in our Red River at the Alexander Docks. That was the last straw for me, my family, my community. That was the last indignity we would suffer without an appropriate response. Our response was to be Bear Climb Patrol. Bear Clan was originally formed in 1992 in response to violence against women and the lack of appropriate response from the state. Back in the day, it was said you could punch a hole in a storefront window on Selkirk Avenue and the police would be there about 4 or 5 minutes, but you could hit your partner and the police may or may not show up at all. The patrols ran until 1995. At their peak, they had 200 volunteers and patrols were done primarily in vehicles on the weekend. At one point, it turned into a workers' co-op and they started to do security for pay. In 1995, there was a series of departures that led to the program being shut down, and it went to hibernation for most of the next 20 years. Sadly, this new incarnation of Bear Climb Patrol was once again formed in direct response to violence, in direct response to the frustration over the status quo. For me personally, for my family, for my community, the death of Tina Fontaine was a turning point. The disrespect, the level of violence, the systemic failures to protect this young child really did force a response. It was time at a community level to step up, take back the responsibility of protecting ourselves. If we wanted to live better in a better community, we were going to take an investment, and it had to start with us here in the community. We were going to live that whole be the change you want to see philosophy. Today's Bear Climb Patrol is a community-based, volunteer-driven safety patrol. Our mandate is to protect and empower the women, children, elderly, and vulnerable members of our community. We do this nonviolently, without judgment, and in harmony with the communities we serve. We are not trying to replace the police. Our purpose is to reduce the need for their service. And we do this by being a consistent presence in the community. Our goal is to de-escalate critical incidents before they become a police matter. We don't chase down gang members, drug dealers. We build relationships. We tend to the injured and the addicted. When we first started out, we operated exclusively in the North End here in Winnipeg. Winnipeg is home to the fifth largest urban indigenous population in the world, in excess of 90,000 members and growing. That population, myself included, find ourselves concentrated largely in the inner city, where poverty, addiction, homelessness, exploitation, poor housing stock, near zero vacancy rate, skyrocketing rents exist. And then there's the social safety net that has failed to keep up with the real cost of living for those that rely on their services. Can you imagine trying to meet your daily dietary requirements on little more than $3 a day? Did you know that most of the child apprehensions that go on in our indigenous community is poverty related and not related to abuse or neglect? Did you know that the child welfare system, these children have a dollar value of on average better than $170 per day, but they would never give that to a family to keep the child? These and many other factors make for a hard living in the inner city. When we first started up, we were 12 members sitting around a boardroom table on Selkirk Avenue. 12 like-minded people, all with different gifts, throwing it together for a common goal. You may wonder why we didn't choose other options like COP or neighborhood watch programs that already have an established base and supports. The bottom line is that the state does the vetting for those programs, and there is a criminal record component that disqualifies persons with a criminal record. I wouldn't have been able to contribute as a 4-time convicted felon myself, and likewise, a disproportionate number of my fellow community members. We are 70% Indigenous in the North End, and we do find ourselves incarcerated at much higher rates, and we wanted a program that would allow us to work more freely with our community members. Here at Bear Clan, a criminal record does not automatically disqualify you from participation. We value lived experience. We do, however, have our standards. We won't work with people convicted of or known to be violent towards women. We also won't work with anyone with a history of sexual violence of any kind. Beyond that, if there's time and distance between a person and their crimes, if they've made a conscious decision to move forward in their lives in a good way, to contribute, to give back to their community, why would we stand in their way? We are trying to undo the effects of marginalization on our community members. We are trying to help every member of our community develop a stakeholder mentality, because hopelessness is chased away by empowerment. I'd like to share with you a little about the evolution of Bear Clan as I know it. Starting on September 19th, 2014, it took us about 10 months to build the infrastructure that has become the Bear Clan Patrol we know today. I'm talking about the policy procedures, governance documents, bylaws, constitution, finance, financial policy, those kinds of fun stuff. But now, that hard work is done. When another community wants to adopt the model, with the appropriate supports in place, they can be up and running as little as 6 weeks. The evidence to that is that we have expanded to include 25 communities in 13 cities and 6 provinces since June of 2016. From Montreal to East Hastings, Vancouver, and the calls just keep coming. I was out in Swan Lake First Nation there this week, Dakota Teepee. We've got chapters in Brandon and Selkirk. We've opened West Broadway, West End, all in the last 6 weeks. Yeah. Today, we have more than 1,000 Winnipeg-based volunteers. We've expanded recently into West End, West Broadway. We have helped other communities to start their own safety patrol, like the 204 Neighborhood Watch, a group organized by the Filipino community in the Maples. We have also helped to establish patrols at both IRCOM sites in the Centennial community. They have even gone so far as to invite me to do training sessions with them. At the end, the participants were given vests and were now empowered to protect their community. It felt really good to be part of that, because that's the stakeholder mentality that we're trying to foster. These are the kinds of things that help people, you know, become more acclimatized to their community and less afraid of the things that are going on around them. All these other groups started with a motivated community and a copy of our policy procedures and governance documents that we gave freely. I've also been to several First Nations community. I flew up to Thunder Bay, Lethbridge, and Nelson, BC to spread the program. We've had interested visitors from Australia, Europe, Japan, and requests just keep coming. I guess my point is, we're not alone in wanting to live better than we have been, or in being willing to step up and do something about it. Complacency is just not getting it done. Now is the time for bold action, and bold action is being taken. I'd like to talk a little bit more about the evolution of the patrols. It wasn't easy in the beginning. In June of 2015, we figured we finally had a workable model and embarked on our first patrol. We patrolled that one first night, and we quickly realized that we were making some mistakes. There were things we hadn't considered. There were preparations we simply failed to make. So we took a step back, looked at it again, tightened up a few loose ends. We determined that our volunteers should be at least 18 years of age. We probably shouldn't be wearing flip-flops when we're out there. That kind of stuff. On July 16, 2015, we stepped out once again, but this time with a commitment. We were committed to being there 4 days a week, Thursday through Sunday, every week, and we have lived up to that commitment ever since. June of 2016, the volunteers decided they wanted to do Wednesday, they wanted to pick up the extra day and do a Wednesday patrol as well, so we expanded our patrols to include Wednesdays. So from there on, we were out 5 days a week. In August of 2016, we started doing youth mock patrols every other Tuesday, and that continues to this day. So now we're active in the community 5 and 6 days a week. This summer, the volunteers wanted to do late patrols on Fridays, so we started doing late patrols on Friday. A few weeks later, they insisted on going late Saturday nights as well, so now we're doing late patrols on Saturday night as well. With the addition of the West End and West Broadway patrols, we are now doing 11 and 12 patrols, 5 and 6 nights a week, averaging 20 volunteers per shift. Last year, we did in the order of 21,000 hours of volunteer service given back to our community, not including extra outings like parades and marches and vigils and things like that. And we were part of the Santa Claus parade twice. This year, with the new West End and West Broadway patrols, I expect we were nearly double that number. We don't stop for hot days, holidays, cold or rain. Lightning, on the other hand, is the only thing we don't work with because nobody wants to get lit up. So, we have on occasion canceled patrols in the face of severe summer storms, but outside of that, we're like the postman. You can count on us. Of course, in the beginning, attracting volunteers was a challenge. Some nights we only had 4 or 5 volunteers out, and it was scary. We didn't know how the community was going to respond to us. We didn't know how the police were going to respond to us. We just kept at it night after night. One thing I did notice early on was that nearly our entire volunteer base came from outside of our community. There were many nights where I was the only community member out. There was real reluctance amongst community members to come out on patrol for fear that they would have a negative interaction with the community member while in the company of the patrols, and then be faced to force that person, you know, in the light of day, alone, and be victim of some kind of violence. So we've largely put that to bed, thankfully. With the help of community partners, we were able to provide about 20 tons of produce and baked goods to our community members, and this has helped us build a rapport with our community. So far this year, we've done nearly 8 tons, and it's only March, so that's fantastic. We regularly get donations of clothing that we in turn donate out in the community. We have, in times of crisis, been here to support our community, and now there are plenty of nights where our patrols are made up entirely of community members, except when Mike's there. Just kidding. We are considered an ally in the community now. That, to me, is a victory in and of itself. Community engagement has always been the goal, to reconnect whatever disconnect that exists between humanity that sees community members walk right by a person in crisis without offering some form of assistance. On that note, I'd like to share a story about a young woman my wife and I came across one evening when we first got started. We live on Stella between Mackenzie and McGregor, and we were rushing home one evening. For one reason or another, we turned south on McGregor from Selkirk. I spotted a young woman curled up on there's a dental office at 135 McGregor, and she was curled up on a stoop there. And it was April, 6 o'clock in the evening. It had been raining. It was still cold, still chilly. She's laying there in the fetal position on that stoop, part in a puddle. She had no jacket on, backless shirt, no shoes, no purse. So my wife and I, we quickly turned our car around and went back to check on her well-being. When we got up to her, you know, I asked her if she was okay. She goes, "No, I'm not okay." I said, "What happened?" She goes, "I was robbed. They beat me up. They took my stuff." I said, "Okay." And I called the 911 and I got ambulance on their way. I called my group because they were just gearing up, and I had them come over to meet with us as well. And I asked her while we were waiting, you know, "How long have you been here?" And she said, "I've been here for an hour." And I think that's what really shook me up, you know, the fact that during the heat of rush hour traffic in our small community, with buses and cars and trucks and people moving about all over the place, not one person checked on this young woman's safety. And it's that's what we're trying to defeat in our community now. That's the mentality that we're working hard to defeat, and I am seeing changes. Now, with the recent crime stats came out last year, I know they paint an ugly picture. Property crime is up, violent crime is up, IV drug use has reached epidemic proportions. We have seen more than tenfold increase in IV drug use year over year. Our first year we found about 18 used needles, our second year we found 300, last year more than 4,000. This year we found over 2,500 needles already, and it's only March. We hear from Winnipeg Police Services that the calls for services are down when we're out, and that's part of the reason why we keep expanding our patrols. And I'd like to point out that nobody dictates to my volunteers what shifts are going to work and how they're going to do things. They tell me what they want to do, and I make it happen. It's nice being led by my people. The community is becoming engaged, finally. They are talking to one another, and now they have a real ally in the community in Bear Clan Patrol. Our relationships, real relationships are being developed. Our role in the community is becoming clearer. It's becoming larger. We're mentoring youth in our community. We're finding resources for persons, homeless people, addicted people, street-involved women. We're out there trying to put out every fire that we can, and it just keeps building. And as our numbers grow, as our capacity grows, I expect so will our tasks in the community. When we first started out, we had a very narrow focus. In the wake of the death of Tina Fontaine, traffic was the enemy. But now, we've definitely moved forward. We bring bags full of fruit, apples, oranges, bananas, granola bars, fruit snacks, sometimes candy for the kids. We now carry naloxone, the anti-overdose drug. We have artificial external defibrillator. We have first aid kits. We actually took, because we do the youth mock patrols, we actually took 22 of our youth in our community and had them all trained to use naloxone kits, recognize the signs of overdose and how to deal with it effectively, because those are the children that are going to be facing it soon. And so we thought they should be prepared. We have been connecting people with other resources. Last winter, I connected one of our local homeless men with the Doorways Project. They specialize in housing people with issues related to housing. He's still housed. He still abuses solvents, but I know we won't find him underneath one of our bridges this year. Feels really good to be part of that. And there have been others, and there will be more. We do serve a marginalized community, and many of our most dedicated members are themselves marginalized. I think that lends to the credibility we have in the community, and now the benefits of being part of Bear Clan are becoming real and tangible. Tangible? The way the children respond to us is amazing. They come running from all directions because they know we will have food. The parents do. Even the young kids in gangster attire come up to us and ask for food on occasion. We've taken weapons, big and small, off the streets. Got a pair of brass knuckles last week. Just the other day, they found a big bag of some kind of white powder. I don't know what it was, but we give it to the police. I'll let you get that. Okay. So our first year, we got 19 bags of meth off the street, and I mean full bags of meth. Yeah. Last year, I think 8 bags. So far this year, I think 3. And one of them was a huge bag of methamphetamine. It was found in the McDonald's woman's bathroom at McGregor and Main and Mountain. It made the news. I don't know if anybody's seen that. That was crazy. But we got all that stuff removed from the community and disposed of safely. The WRHA is scheduled to release 1.5 million needles into the inner city this year in the name of harm reduction, and I'm all for that. The issue that I have with it is the fact that there's no real reclamation program in place. Again, we're seeing a tenfold increase in recovered needles year on year, 4,000 last year. I don't think we're going to make 40,000 this year, but still, I expect we'll find probably closer to 12,000 needles this year. These are hazards in the community, to the children, to everyone that comes in contact with these things. There is a percent chance that every time we interact with those things, that somebody's going to get hurt. I myself was stuck last fall. One of our other volunteers was stuck about 6 weeks ago. And, we have to go to the hospital. You got to get multiple vaccinations and things like that. It's a scary process, and we're looking for a better way. I was trying to push for safe injection sites, but because we don't have the population density and the concentration of addiction, they're saying that that's probably not viable. And I get that. But then, to not offer up any other solution kind of sucks. So I'm going to be pushing now for a better needle exchange program. When I think back to some of our successes, I remember a night in August 2015 when we sent 6 children under the age of 16 to hospital for overconsumption. I think of the Dufferin fire and the donation drive that we hosted that saw to the needs of the 7 families, 29 people, 17 children, 12 adults. Then with the surplus donations, we held a two-day free giveaway attended by some 450 people. In the end, we gave away a full 53-foot trailer loaded full of clothing, bedding, furniture, and housewares. But our greatest success is, and will likely always be, the night we stopped the exploitation of a minor female. This incarnation of Bear Clan Patrol was formed in response to what happened to Tina Fontaine, a young girl that was lured into prostitution by people she trusted, people she considered friends, people that smiled at her while they hurt her. One night in October of 2015, we came across 3 young women, 2 in their 20s, and 1 was noticeably a child. They were laughing, giggling, heading out for the evening. We were a big group that night, about a dozen. That was when we first started, so a big group was a dozen. we had just started wearing our fancy new vests. When we first started out, I went and got these cool black t-shirts because they look fantastic, right? But in October, when you put a jacket on, they become completely useless. So now we have things more like what Mike is wearing right now. So anyway, when they saw us, they were curious as to our purpose and who we were. We had a short conversation, and somehow in that 90 seconds, we connected with one of the young women, and she broke down crying when the other two left. I said, you know, what's the matter? She goes, I don't want to go with them. They're going to do something bad. That girl's only 13. To make a long story short, it was the intention of that one older girl to take that 13-year-old child and sell her to a 23-year-old male friend of theirs for the purpose of prostitution. And because we occupy that physical space, because we engage with the people that we come into contact with, and because we cared enough to act, we were able to stop that from happening that day. We still see her there in the developments. She still lives with her nana. We walk by her door 5 and 6 nights a week. She says hello when I see her, and I take great pleasure in that. Now from here, looking back over the last few years, I can see the impact our work has had. It has been said that we have changed the conversation, that we have set a new precedent, and that we are writing a new history. Kind of gives me goosebumps just thinking about it.